He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Good morning. This is Car Keys. I am Jada Markin, and Robin Leach is out of town, out of the country, and on a safari as we speak. So I am joined this morning by Alice Beck, who has joined me on the show before. Alice and I are always talking cars. So Alice, I know you wanted to talk about the Cybertruck. What do you want to tell us about the Cybertruck? Have you seen any?
So yes, I saw my first Cybertruck a couple weeks ago at the Interlaken Inn. I pulled over to take a look at it because it is quite a thing to see. It's a very large truck.
Yes,
a lot of real estate.
If you're looking for shade, it's a great place to hide behind.
Absolutely.
So I know it's controversial, and Robin has talked about it before, and I've made the point that, you know, I've never liked the Cybertruck. I don't like the, I never thought it would. I always thought it would be a sales flop. Time will tell, maybe not, and I don't think it really matters. I think what's more important to Tesla is the technology that is on board that truck, whether it be the stainless steel skin or the all electronics and no physical contact between the between the steering wheel and the driving wheels. Same with the accelerator, and that's already true. And brakes. It's all what Airbus in the airline industry calls a fly-by-wire. And I think that technology will trickle not necessarily down, but to other vehicles in the Tesla lineup.
How close a look did you get of that Cybertruck, Alice?
I walked right up to it.
Were you able to open up, see in the bed and everything?
The bed was closed. They had the panel that came down over the bed.
Yeah. So you didn't get to see that or the interior. You didn't run into the owner, I presume.
No, I did not. I just kind of walked around it.
So did you look for any rust?
So no, I did not. I did not look for any rust. It looked pretty new. It did have fingerprints on the panels where you open the doors.
Yeah,
that, I think, could get frustrating for some consumers.
Well, that's a given with stainless steel. But you know that they're doing, there are companies now that are wrapping the Cybertrucks. And I've seen a number of them in pictures after they've been wrapped. And they look really fantastic when you get the colors right.
Well, that's the thing you can do with wraps. You can wrap pretty much any vehicle.
Yeah.
I guess you could do that with a Cybertruck.
Well, they are doing it with them. They're doing it because, you know, you can't get a color on it. You get stainless steel and then do as you wish.
Yeah. Well, wraps are a good idea, I guess. And we know the stainless steel, part of the reasoning behind the use of stainless steel is that it's supposed to be, if not bulletproof, at least not easy to put any dents in it. I still think it's a novelty. And there are other electric vehicles out there. We know about the Ford Lightning and its shortcomings.
Yeah, well, the Ford Lightning is all but dead on arrival at this point. I believe they've stopped manufacturing on it because they have been losing close to $100,000 per unit. And the contracting people that use a truck have flatly rejected this thing as a pile of junk, sorry to say.
I don't know enough about it, and I don't drive trucks, really, so I'm careful about the opinion I have on it. I think it'll be interesting to see how the Chevy Silverado does, and I think it's a more capable vehicle, like it's a more heavy-duty pickup truck, and it's based on the Hummer electric vehicle. I forget the name now. I'm sure it's H something, but I think the Silverado gets like up to 400 miles of range. It's got a huge battery pack. It'll be interesting to see how it sells. Well, but yeah, I guess the jury's out on electric trucks.
Well, the EV market in general right now is kind of frozen because they've Tesla's laid off 10% of its workforces across the world over this. And a lot of the main companies that have been creating EVs are backing off and switching production. I know Ford has said that they are switching over to the hybrid electrics now because the sales just aren't there for the EVs. There's too much anxiety about the lack of a network to plug these things in at. The cost of operating them all depends on where you are. No one can really pin that down. And items I have seen on the EVs as well say that, you know, unless you're driving in the ideal conditions, your mileage deviates so much from winter to summer, from what you may be hauling. And an interesting thing that one of the reviewers on YouTube was saying about the electric vehicle, which I really didn't realize, is that when you go on the highway, you actually get less mileage because the motors are running all the time. Whereas when you're driving in town or around the area, stopping and starting, you get better mileage on those EVs.
That is correct, yes. But, you know, a lot of people travel on smaller roads and in stop and go traffic, where I do think the EV has an advantage. I read a survey quickly this morning, a couple surveys actually, and it seems like about 50% of people who actually own an EV, which really are the people who are, I guess, educated to have an opinion, are looking at going back to buying an ICE engine, you know, an internal combustion engine as their next vehicle.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much laid out. That's why I say the honeymoon is over with the electrical vehicle. It's in general, be it a car or a truck. People are very leery of them right now, and the technology itself
I think that's a right now thing. I think.
Yeah,
and I see it. I go to New York a lot, and around the airports, and the charging stations that used to be empty. There used to be like one of the parking lots around JFK has, I think, about a dozen charging non-Tesla. I forget which one of the big companies charging stations, and it used to be that there were two or three being used, and now there's a line of 15, 20 vehicles waiting to get charged, on top of the dozen or so that are being charged. So
yeah, and therein, when people see that, anxiety is created because if you own one now, you're going to stand in line, and it's not like waiting in line at a gas pump. You're waiting in line for a much longer period of time if, in fact, your station hasn't been pilfered.
Well, have you ever waited in line at a non-self-serve pump on the New Jersey Turnpike in the middle of summer?
No.
Well,
that's a Jersey thing.
I think the bottom line is the infrastructure will get better. And yes, in the next few years, it may be a difficult proposition for some people. But I think if you charge at home, you're coming out ahead. Plus, they're fun to drive.
Well, you know, again, the market itself is flat right now, so we'll see what happens. I think the technology has a long way to go before it's going to get major acceptance by the general public in this country. And I think a big part of that is the lack of a serious infrastructure out there for travel charging and a lot of other things. Insurance costs are much higher on these. And even though the percentage of them that are blowing up, spontaneously combusting, if you will, that's causing insurance rates to go up because there's enough of it that it sounds like an everyday thing to people because of the way we get news these days.
Okay, Mike, there have been less Tesla bursting into flames than there ever were Ford Pintos in the 1970s.
Oh, yeah, no, we know that, but not in the eyes of a lot of people. It's perception. And the media, once again, reports, just as they do plane crashes, the safest way to travel is on a plane. But sometimes when they report these crashes, you think it wasn't. And the same thing goes with EVs and the fact, too, that the insurance rates are higher on them because of the perception that's been built out there that they just, you know, will blow up on a moment's notice.
Yeah, Well, like I said, we are in a transition period that is lasting a little bit longer than we thought it might.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot longer.
Yeah, to switch to something else, I know, and it can we can cross over. I know Alice wanted to talk about young people, kids going to college, and college cars. And what should we be getting our kids to go to college? And I'm, you know, asking now the question is, do they have charging stations on college campus?
So I graduated college about 5 years ago, and at that point my school did have, I believe, 3 charging stations. I believe mostly were just the Tesla charging stations for faculty who had Teslas at the time. But that is a good thing to bring up, is whether kids should be looking into getting electric or hybrid vehicles for going to school, and if the infrastructure is there for them to be doing that. Also, you know, what's going to be safest and what's going to be less on insurance, because college students notoriously do not have
a track record that warrants them getting decent insurance, and a lot of them have cars registered in their parents' names. We've all done that, mm-hmm, to keep insurance rates low.
Absolutely.
Which, by the way, is not necessarily doing the driver a favor, because at some point you have to get your own first car and insure it on your own. So sooner or later it catches up with you.
Absolutely. I think it's a good thing to focus on, you know, what cars are going to be good for the long haul of college and potentially afterwards. In terms of how much stuff you can fit into it when you're moving. I know I moved about 10 times during my time in college. So for me, I had a Ford Focus hatchback, and that really was effective in terms of being able just to throw everything into it.
That was not an all-wheel drive car.
It was not. So that was not something I considered.
But you were a Southern girl, too.
Yes, I bought it in Georgia, but then I went to school in Massachusetts, and there were many times in the winter in Massachusetts that I wish I had an all-wheel drive vehicle. Of course, you might not know that ahead of time where you're going to go to school, because obviously if you go to school in Florida or Georgia, you do not need an all-wheel drive.
And so parents, if you want to avoid a little trick I learned, if you want to avoid having to do all those long hauls for your kids, a lot of cars can be accommodated with a hitch, and U-Haul trailers are pretty inexpensive. And I know my daughter traveled cross country a couple times, towing a small, like a 4 foot wide, 8 foot long, 7 or 8 foot long trailer in back of her little Subaru Impreza. So you don't need a massive SUV to tow a small trailer. And it is a pretty effective way of moving stuff to and from a college campus that may be some distance away from where you live.
Absolutely. A car I've been thinking about a lot recently in terms of being able to move a lot of stuff is the Honda Element, which is a car that has been around for quite a while. I actually am not sure if they still are in production.
No, the Honda Element is not in production anymore. But it was based on the second generation Honda CR-V. So, if I'm correct, the CR-V that was produced during the years 2003 or 4 and 2007 or so, and that is the base of the Honda Element. So, one or two generations later, they stopped making it.
I think, doesn't Kia make something that's very similar to that, though?
Yeah, but no. I mean, it's not quite the same thing. I mean, there's some of the same idea. I don't think it's as roomy as an Element. I'm not sure that Kia is actually an all-wheel drive. The Element is, or not, an all-wheel drive. Most of them, certainly in our neck of the woods, are all-wheel drive. And they came with either a stick. I know somebody very locally who has a red one with a stick, and it's a pretty cool little vehicle, and it's great. And you can put all sorts of stuff in there, and it has a rubber mat on the floor. You can just hose it out when you're done.
Yeah, you can remove the seats.
Yeah.
And create as much. And it's a box, so you get full height all around for loading up boxes or anything you need. My friend was a drummer, and he would take the seats out and load up all of his drum kits. And it was excellent.
I think there's a little cult following, you know, that element. And in fact, one of our local shops who sells used vehicles has like a half a dozen of them right now. And they're, if you know where the shop is, and a lot of people do know, and we'll see those elements. And there are silver, red, green, there are a bunch of them. They're great vehicles. I don't know what they're selling for these days. They tend to be kind of on the expensive side because, like most Hondas, and they've held their values pretty well. But that is a cool vehicle, by the way.
It is, and it's a good, I think, used option. You know, if you can get the right price for it, it'd be a great option for
sending your kid off to college.
Yes.
Good plan. Good idea. So, Alice, what else did you want to talk about? I know we were talking about, when we're talking cars, we're always talking, referring to cars. It's easier to refer to cars by their names than it is, well, different brands have different ways of identifying cars.
Yes, so you can either go the regular name route, or you can go the number.
The alphanumeric way, like Mercedes and BMW, and a lot of times those numbers used to have a meaning, and they don't anymore. But so, what do you like for name? What are the names? What are the new names?
Well, I've always loved the Lotus route of naming cars, which is all of their cars' names starts with E.
I did not know that. You just told me that a few minutes ago, and I had no idea. And I'm trying to think of a Lotus car with a non-E starting name, and I can't think of one.
I can't think of any either, because I was thinking that if you went back to the 70s with it, then maybe then, but even then they were naming them with the E. So the Europa.
Can you name your Lotuses or Lodi E from the beginning?
From the beginning? No, I could not.
Yeah, see, Ford had that with the Fiesta, the Focus, and the, what was the other one? Damn, it's going to invade me now. I can't think of what the third one was in the F-Series there. Fusion.
Fusion.
The Fiesta, Focus, and Fusion. And they were basically the same car, just bigger at each notch.
Yeah, and then they had the Fiso. I remember about 10, 15 years ago, they redesigned the logo of the F-150, and people would look at it and say, oh, what, is that the new Ford Fiso? But anyway.
I don't remember that one.
Ford F-150 Raptor.
Yes.
So the Raptor name has
So
become...
what do you think of the name, that Ford's use of the, for instance, the Mustang name, to launch their first EV? I think that was a terrible marketing.
Oh, I was horrified. I was just, this was, that is an abuse of the Mustang name, and that vehicle they made is an insult to the whole tradition of a Mustang.
I agree with you.
It was almost as bad when they shrunk it down to a little, tried to make it into like a Horizon kind of thing. That was another one of those. A Mustang is a Mustang. It's supposed to be a muscle car. That's what the whole image of it was, and you people are just... You need to retire that name if you can't build a car like it.
I think you're right. I mean, I think it dilutes the brand, the Mustang brand, for sure.
Yeah.
And it confuses people. I totally agree. I think that was a big mistake. Back to Lotus, and I'm just thinking of that. Mike, you probably remember Lotus East, right?
Oh, yeah, I sure do.
So for people who are...
That was a funny little place down
there. Less than the 40 years that we might have been around here or more, there is still in Millerton, New York, a building called the Lotus Building. And it is named the Lotus Building because that was the site of Lotus East, and Lotus East was one of the two importers of Lotus cars for for the United States.
That's
it was right here in our neck of the woods. And we grew up looking at a bunch of sports cars all lined up. And it was a heck of a sight, actually.
Yeah, right there along Route 44. Little short things, too.
Short, light.
It was an interesting car that I don't think anyone has created anything with that same type of a style. It was a one alone, and nobody's duplicated it.
Actually, well, that's the interesting story of the Mazda MX-5. The creators of the Mazda MX-5 had the Lotus Elan as their model. That was, you know, the idea was to create a car similar to that Lotus Elan, but mass market it and turn it into something reliable, like any Japanese cars of the 70s or 80s. Those cars were notorious for being, if anything, more reliable than American cars or any other cars.
Also, with the Elan, they also had the De Tomaso Valengela, which is another car company that makes cars that have great names. So they have a Mangusta, which is the mongoose.
Yeah.
Which is a great classic, I believe late 70s, De Tomaso production.
See, now I'm lost. I'm sitting here with a car nerd, so I'm learning things as we go. These are very limited production cars and car companies. I didn't even know this one. What is it called?
The Mangusta?
No, the Mangusta I know, the one you just showed me here.
The one, I believe, and my pronunciation might be way off, the Valenga.
Vallelunga. That's a racetrack in Italy. Well, that is a town in Italy.
Yes, there were not many of these made.
I'm
this was
sure.
made in 1965. But that is one of the cars that the Mazda MX-5 is based off of.
Really?
They had a Lotus Elan, and they had one of these.
Okay. And so for those of us who like cars and would like to have a little a toy car or a little fun car in the summer. For the last 30 years, the Mazda MX-5 has been a pretty obvious choice if you're looking for something simple, something fun, convertible, easy to drive, inexpensive to maintain. All the generations, all the different generations of the Mazda MX-5 are actually great cars. And there are still quite a few around.
Oh, there's, you know what, springtime in New England.
When the MX-5s come out.
They infect the roads, and it's in a positive way.
So we're working on helping Alice get her first sports car, and it's looking like it's going to be an MX-5.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's nice. Well, folks, we're at about 24 minutes, and I think it's time for safety, if I may. Don't know if you're aware or not, but a bunch of new laws have taken effect here in Connecticut today. One of them that has to do with the work zones. And as you may well know, another state worker was killed just the other day in a work zone here in Connecticut by a drunk driver. But the new legislation is expanding the ability to put cameras with ticketing capabilities on these work zones. So that, you know, people are not slowing down like they should be. So now they're going to allow them to start placing the cameras that will take the photographs, and they can come and remind you that you should slow down for the work zone.
I think I can live with that.
Oh, absolutely.
I think Alice and I were going to bring this up. There are a lot of work zones, if you haven't noticed. Actually, I just drove on the road this morning, and I thought, geez, this is the last time I'm going to see this road being repaved in my lifetime because it hadn't been repaved in decades, and it's now beautifully smooth. But there are a lot of work crews either repaving roads. There's a lot of Comcast cable installations going on. So it's that time of year. Beware. Pay attention to the flag people. And I say pay attention to them, but don't trust them blindly, because once in a while they do make mistakes, and those can be costly. But you know, pay attention and definitely slow down with or without cameras. That should be the case. Alice, what did you want to bring up as far as safety? You had a if we still have time, you had something to say about intersections.
I think we just need to be paying more attention at intersections as a humanity, and learning the rules of how to approach an intersection and who's going first through it. If you're all approaching at the same time, it's always going to be the person to your right.
Yes.
That's right.
So you've noticed that I actually coached Alice before getting on the show to make sure she didn't turn into another Robin and start going on a rant. Short tip here, but yes, it's summer. Have fun on the roads. Be careful, and we will see you soon.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, Robinhood Radio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.